Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos Lamed Hey. We are starting on Lamed Alam and Beis. We're starting halfway down the Amud. We are starting with a drasha. The Gemara's discussion has been whether a woman can get pregnant in her first experience of having tashmish with her husband. So the Gemara's basic approach is no, she cannot. Why is this part of our discussion? Because yesterday what we spoke about is the Mishnah. Strange Mishnah tucked away here at the end of the third parak of the Masechta. God willing, today we're going to be finishing the third parak of the Masechta. So the Mishnah describes a scenario where you have two brothers married to two sisters, and Rachmanis, their wives got swapped on the first night, and a question of what becomes of that, meaning it was Bishogeg. So what are the ramifications regarding Karban Chataos? 16 in total. I'm not going to go through all that. That was yesterday's discussion. And on top of that, the concern that maybe there was a pregnancy in that first act of relations. And if there was a pregnancy, so the result of that is that the child in the Rechmanis is going to be a mamzer. So what needs to happen is that there needs to be separation of 3 months in order to establish paternity, who in fact the father is. And so this launched the Gemara into a discussion of whether or not a woman could get pregnant on the first occasion of having relations when her virginity is being broken. And the Gemara's basic approach is that she can't. Tamar did. Now, Tamar's discussion, that we did this at the end of yesterday's daf, Gemara's discussion, which is a delicate discussion, to say the least, but the Torah is really open about discussing it, and the Gemara is even more open about discussing it, because the Gemara was written for a mature audience. And so the Gemara's discussion is that, yes, it's true, she was married twice over before having relations with Yehuda, but she still had her virginity preserved, even as she was having relations with Yehuda. How is that possible? So go back to yesterday's stuff. The Gemara discussed it in detail, in pretty graphic detail. So be that as it may. So she had her Dan Basulim when she had relations with Yehuda, her father-in-law. So how did she become pregnant? So the Gemara says that she had a maneuver that was used by Tamar in order to make herself have the ability to become pregnant, even though it was the first time she was having relations. And this maneuver of Tamar, so it was a famous maneuver, similar to, right, the Heimlich maneuver, which is a maneuver named after its originator. So over here, there was a maneuver as well, right? Strange as it is, but the Gemara said it. In other words, people named their children Tamar after that maneuver. In other words, they employed that maneuver. Okay, regardless. We're going to continue with this discussion of whether a woman can get pregnant in the first act of Bia. And in this discussion, what are we going to learn together? So a little bit about Tuma Tahara. Couple have relations, a married couple have relations, and he becomes Tamei as a result of the relations. And she becomes Tamei as a result of the relations. Now, if you were listening to last week's Sedra, so you knew this, meaning it's Psukim in the Torah. Okay, granted, by the way, we're tucked away at the end of Parshas Metzora. And so you got to really be paying attention. Well, truth of the matter is what we all have to do. We have to prepare the Sedra prior to Shabbos, but that's for a different occasion, right? I'll let your Rav talk to you about the Musar. But anyway, tucked away at the end of Parshas Metzora, right? Perek Tezvav and Psukim Tezayin Yedzayin Yudches. I'm looking right now at Pasuk Yudches. Well, I'll back up one Pasuk. Two Psukim. V'ishki Sitzei Mimeneshech Vazera. Let me read the Pasuk correctly. V'ishki Sitzei Mimeneshech Vazera. So when a man has a seminal discharge and he's doing so in the context of let's assume the best, in the context of marriage, and he's with his wife, but still, when all said and done, he's tummy, meaning a man has a seminal discharge, he's tummy. Now I know that sounds strange, by the way, he's doing a mitzvah, he's with his wife, okay, great. So that does not negate the fact that he's going to become tummy. Tummy does not come as a result of an avera. Tumma sometimes comes as a result of the Aver, but sometimes Tumma comes because that's just simply the nature of Tumma, right? A woman gives birth. She's Tumeya, right? She facilitated in the first mitzvah in the Torah. Nevertheless, Tumma is just simply a result. It's just simply a reality. You're Tumeya. And not only is he Tumma when he engages in relations, but she becomes Tumeya as well. I skip two psukim. V'isha asher ishkav isha usa shechva zara. A woman involved in the act of relations, she's also going to be Tamea. Now, Rashi says, on Chumash, don't think that it's because that what's happening is that he is inserting his Zera into her and that zera is the thing that makes her tamei. So Rashi and Chumash says, and Rashi and our Gemara is going to teach us, no, it has nothing to do with it. Meaning it's just simply a function of having an act of relations. Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. Rashi writes, V'rachsu b'mayim, am I reading the right Rashi? Yes, I am. Gzeras melechi, shitza tamei eisha bebiya, just simply gzeras melech. In other words, this is just simply the legislation of the Torah in which a woman becomes tamei when she had relations. Veina tamei shem no gab b'shech v'zera. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's the zera was inserted into her. Sharei maga beis tarmu, because we all know the rules of tamei tahara, and even if we don't all know the rules, it is the rule, which is that when tamei touches something which is internal, that's maga beis tarim, that doesn't make you tamei. So why is she tamei? Because she had relations. It's really that simple. Now, with that stated, how does that have anything to do with our discussion? Funny you should ask. We are now continuing. Right where we left off yesterday, Tanu Rabbanan, Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and the Gemara. Osa Prat Lekala Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, so who is going to be exempt from this Tumah? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, a Kala, meaning a woman for the first time having relations, so she's not going to be Tamea. Okay, so this Tumah, that a woman's going to be Tamei, every time she's involved in relations, so that's true every time. Every time with exception to the first time. And v'chachamim omrim prat l'shelo kedarka, and the chachamim say no. The exclusion is where she had relations, but she did not have relations in the natural act of relations, but unnatural. Unnatural means anal intercourse. So amalei homberid Rav Nachman l'Rav Nachman l'makasav Rav Yehuda. So what's the svar behind Rav Yehuda? A woman for the first time is not going to be tamei. Why? So the Gemara over here proposes a couple suggestions. So the son of Rav Nachman, his name is Hon, which is an unusual name, but that's his name. So Lemakas of Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara now proposes the first svar behind Rav Yehuda, which is that Torah chasal tachshit kala. Oh, maybe because the Torah just simply is going to have a little rachmanis for the kala. Kala spent a day preparing herself for the wedding. Okay, and she sat there with the makeup for a day. Okay. Right, you think it's a modern phenomena that the women are there the whole day preparing. It's not a modern phenomena, meaning Bizmana Gemara, right? We go back to Megillas Esther, just in terms of preparation, right? Megillas Esther, they prepared for a year. Okay, so over here, so they're preparing the whole day. And now what? Now you're going to tell them that, okay, fine, and that night they're going to have the mitzvah's bia. And now she's going to be toveling in the mikvah, and now what's going to happen to all her makeup? Now you think to yourself, by the way, what kind of svara is that? It's a svara that we just found together in the Gemara, meaning the Gemara is entertaining for a moment. The Gemara is going to reject it, but the Gemara is entertaining for a moment that, yeah, in other words, the Torah does in fact have this kind of compassion towards the amount of energy and money that she just put in, and so therefore she's not going to be required to tov on the mikvah. Okay, so Amalei, so Rav Nachman, when he hears the svara, it's funny, he doesn't reject it outright. He just simply says, no, there's a different svara. Rav Nachman obviously feels a better svara. Amalei lefishe nisha metaberes mi bia rishona. Because she can't get pregnant. So in other words, the only kind of bia that's going to make her tamea is only the bia that could impregnate her. And this first bia is not going to impregnate her. So that's why we're discussing this particular pasuk right now. So so the Gemara now says, good. So that's the svara behind Rav Yehuda. The Chachamim obviously disagree. What is the point of disagreement between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda? So, so here we're going to go through the phrases of the pasuk. According to the Chachamim, Shech Vazera Prat Lahara, so that comes to exclude partial penetration, meaning the Gemara's assumption throughout Shas is that when it comes to the act of Bia, so the act of Bia, when the Torah says Shech Vazera, meaning it has to be full penetration. Partial penetration now, partial penetration throughout all the Isurim of Arayas. When it comes to any illicit relations, partial penetration is considered Bia. We will be discussing this in detail, in graphic detail, in the sixth parak of our Masechta, Yevamos. Okay. So anyway, so over here, that's true. Meaning for the Isurim Ha'ara, partial penetration is in fact considered Bia. But for Tumah, meaning the Tumah being described here in Parshas Mitzorah, so for that you need full penetration. That's one. Osa pratla shaloka darka, and the osa means that it has to be natural, can't be unnatural. Rav Yehuda Savra, now according to Rav Yehuda, here's how we're going to parse the pasuk. So Rav Yehuda Savra shaloka darka v'hara m'shech v'zera. Both shaloka darka and hara learn now from shech v'zera. Shech v'zera teaches us both points, that number one, it has to be full penetration, and number two, it has to be natural relations. So the osa prat la kala, and osa is coming to exclude the kala. Okay, good. It's just a question now of how to properly parse and darshan the pasuk. Good. Ki also Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan kol shasha shasa achar bala eser shanim v'nisei shuvenei yoledes. Okay. Next point of the Gemara. Okay, so we're talking about when women can get pregnant. So the Gemara now is going to share with us a new point, quoting in the name of Rav Yochanan. A woman has gone 10 years now where she is in, she's in her birthing years. But if she goes 10 years now where basically she's not been married and she's not been trying, so shuvena yoledes. So basically what happens is that the system shuts down. Again, do not turn to me for biological explanations of the Gemara over here. It could be that this is a blend of biology and psychology, but again, I simply do not know enough to intelligently discuss it. But what I do know, however, is that we have a Masorah. And the Gemara tells us that for 10 years of in operation, so that's it. You can't get her operating again. So I'm Rav Nachman Loshan Eloshein Datali Nasei. Aval Datali Nasei Metaberes. Sounds from the Gemara over here that this is a little more psychological than it is biological. Because the Gemara says that, yeah, that's true if for those 10 years she really does not think that she's going to get remarried. However, if let's say during those 10 years she has an interest in getting remarried again, so then a 10-year hiatus from trying to get pregnant is not going to prevent her from getting pregnant. So Amalei Rav Labas Rav Chista Kamiranene Rabbanan Basrech. So Rav says to Bas Rav Chista, the daughter of Chista. The daughter of Chista, also otherwise known as his wife, meaning he married her. I'll go over the history of the of when he married her and after whom he married her, coming up in just a moment. But anyway, but the point is that she went 10 years of being a 10 years of being a widow. So, and then she married Rava, and then she got pregnant. So how did that come to be? So, what Rav is saying to his wife is, I don't know, people are going to start talking about you. So Amr Le, Anna, okay, so I'm sure he said it with sensitivity and, you know. So Amr Le, Anna Daite Alach. So she says, it's true, for 10 years I wasn't married, but Daite Alach. But what I was doing, I was in fact thinking about you. In other words, I was planning on marrying you. So in other words, I had interest during those 10 years, and as we just learned together, that can... the system will not shut down. So daite alech avai. Okay, period. Okay, now a little bit of history over here. Tosfos supplements our Gemara, and Rabbi Natan takes a Gemara and puts it together with the Gemara Baba Basra. Remember that Rav Chista asked his daughters, who would you like to marry? And he presented to her two Talmidei Chachamim. One was Rava, and the other, I don't remember. Okay, another Amora. So, and Tosfos over here doesn't say who the other one is. Okay, anyway. So, Rav Chista said, who do you want to marry? And he asked her this question while she was, who was the other one?
Rami Bar
Chama. Thank you. Okay, good. So, so who do you want to marry? And so she says, I'd like to marry both. So good. So, now, obviously, she can't marry both at the same time. Doesn't work that way. So, Rava jumped up right away, and Rava says, I'll be number two. I'll be the second one. Now, why does he want to be the second one? Because he assumes that the first one's not going to terminate in divorce. He assumes that the first one's going to terminate in death. Okay, so I'll tell you what. In other words, even though I'll be second, but it means I'm going to live longer. Okay, tough choices to make, but that's what he said. And that's what happened. So first, the daughter of Rav Chista was married to Rami Bar Chama, thank you. So first she was married to Rami Bar Chama, and then afterwards, she married Rava. Why was there a 10-year hiatus? Meaning, why couldn't he pick her up a little bit earlier? So Tosfos over here suggests that maybe because he was already married. Tosfos writes, Tosfos, if you want to follow me inside, Daite Alach Havai. So he writes, I'm skipping a couple lines in Tosfos. Sure, Tosfos. V'haisa mitzapashi tizkaim nevuas alafisha ayilarava isha cheres. Rava was already married to another woman. So ichra lina selo. That's what delayed the marriage for such a long time. It's really interesting because, as we all know, in other words, he could have been married to his wife and took on also the daughter of Chista. You get the sense over here that during the period of the Amorayim, they practiced monogamy even at that early stage. meaning we know that monogamy was already legislated going back at least 1,000 years to Rabbeinu Gershom, but probably, I'm guessing, I don't know. But it certainly sounds this way from Tosfos, that because Rava was married, so therefore he didn't want to take on another wife. Okay. Anyway, but the point of the Gemara, as far as we're concerned, the point of the Gemara is that she basically, how did she have children? Meaning, she apparently she had children with Rava. How did that happen? Because she said to him, I've been waiting for you for these 10 years. I was looking to you for these 10 years, and that's why the system did not shut down. Okay. One more quick story. So she says that we waited for 10 years, and then afterwards I gave birth. So, meaning that basically I went on a 10-year hiatus, and after having gone on a 10-year hiatus, so I gave birth. Basically what she was doing was she was challenging the Chachamim. Meaning the Chachamim said that you're going to go 10 years and nothing, and you're not married, and the system's going to shut down. And this woman basically was said to Rav Yosef, Chachamim don't know what they're talking about. It's not true. Amrle biti al tosi alaz al divrei Chachamim. So he says back to her, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't discredit the Chachamim. The Chachamim have a Misara, so don't discredit it. So in other words, we know what we're saying is correct. So it can't be. So there's a detail that you're missing from the story, and you got to fill in the detail. So Amrle lenachri nivalti. She says, okay, you're right. You're right. The detail is that, in fact, during her 10-year hiatus, so she was with a non-Jew. Okay. So she was not totally shut down for those 10 years. Okay. Amr Shmuel. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of the Gemara regarding whether or not a woman can, in fact, give birth in her first act of Bia. So can she? The answer is it's a complicated answer. Meaning the answer is no, but... Okay, and then in that discussion, we also had that if a woman goes 10 years without having a man, so is it possible that her system could shut down? Again, the answer is more or less no, but again, with a couple of qualifiers thrown in there as well. Really one qualifier. Maybe a couple. Okay, Amr Shmuel. Okay, we find ourselves on Lamed Almud Beis, towards the bottom of the Amud, and our discussion now is going to cover, take us basically to the end of the parak. Okay, so the need to wait for 3 months in order to establish paternity. Now, 3 months is a magic number because, we all know this, I'm just spelling it out. 3 months is a magic number because we assume that if, in fact, she got pregnant through the act of relations, so we'll know 3 months from now, right? 3 months is the time where people start showing. The best evidence for that from the Torah, of course, is by Tamar, because Tamar, after she was with her father-in-law, Yehuda, so she started showing after 3 months. Okay, which of course evoked Yehuda's response where, let's take her out and let's burn her. Okay, because she was Mizana. She was with another man. Who would possibly impregnate her? And meanwhile, of course, we all know it was him. Okay, but right, we're not learning the Chumash right now. Anyway, so 3 months in order to establish paternity. So Kulin Tzrich Lamtin Shlosha Chadashim, everyone has to wait 3 months. Meaning that this requirement is going to be a requirement, even if the chances are, the probability is that she didn't become pregnant. Still, once the Chachamim were gozer that you have to wait 3 months, in these types of scenarios where we need to establish paternity, so the legislation is there, even when you think maybe it's not necessary. So chutz. So Shmuel says, I'll give you two exceptions, but only two exceptions, where there is no need to wait 3 months. If you have a convert and a woman who is emancipated and they were minors, those are the two exceptions. In all other circumstances where we need to establish paternity, so there has to be a 3 month waiting period. So the Gemara says, so that means that if you have a katana where we need to establish paternity, meaning she was with a man, and now that for whatever reason the relationship terminated, and we need now to establish paternity. So even though she's a katana, which means she's not going to get pregnant, but still the Chachamim demanded a 3 month waiting period. Not so much over here to establish paternity because the likelihood is she's not going to get pregnant as a katana, but simply because Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. Once the Chachamim legislate, so they legislate in all cases. Now again, Shmuel just gave us two exceptions, but that's it. Those two exceptions are a minor girl who is either converting or was a Meshucharis. So a Jewish girl, a Ketana, so she's going to have to wait 3 months. What was the occasion in which she had relations? So over my. So the Gemara says, well, let's go over the possibilities. Ibe miyon. So are we talking about miyon? V'amar shmo de lo baye. If a woman has undergone miyon, obviously she was a ketana. In other words, the only time that we're going to have a miyon discussion is when she's a ketana. So Shmuel is going to teach us, we're going to hear it right now, that after miyon, post miyon, there does not need to be a 3 month separation. Meaning if she's going to go on to her next husband, she doesn't have to wait 3 months. Now the ibeget hamar shmol chadazim na damar shmol miyana bo ain't tzrich lahamtin shlosha chadashim. Now it's not get tzrich lahamtin shlosha chadashim. Now is it post get? Meaning, so we're talking about a ketana now who received a get. Ketana is going to receive a get. Answer is 100%. Her father marries her off. Her father marries her off. She's now married. If let's say her husband wants to terminate the marriage, he has to give her a get. Okay, so we know post miyun does not require 3 months. Post get does require 3 months. The Gemara's problem is that Shmuel already gave us this information. He taught us this already. So now, Shmuel makes this big statement over here that a ketana, a Jewish ketana, needs to wait 3 months. Well, what are we talking about? If it's miyun, been covered already. And by miyun, you don't have to wait. And if it's a get, you do have to wait. Okay, so what is Shmuel adding over here? Ela biznus, so what we're adding over here is that she was mezana. She just simply had relations with a man, not in the context of marriage. In other words, she just had a maisa's nos. The gazra bana ketana mishum gedola. And so therefore, what the chachamim did is the chachamim made gzera. Look, in the case of ketana, do we need to wait 3 months to establish paternity? The answer, of course, is no, because she's not going to get pregnant. Okay, that's true. However, but because in the case of a gedola, in a parallel case of a gedola, she would have to wait 3 months. So here as well, she will be having to wait 3 months. Okay, in the case of Ketana.
Why does the Mishnah say that she goes immediately?
Hold that, excellent question. In a moment, I'll tell you how good the question is. The Gemara is going to ask your question. So Umi goes in a Ketana Mishim Gedola. So the Gemara says, really? So you tell me that in the case of Ketana, we're going to make a Gzera? I don't think we're going to make a Gzera because of our Mishnah. V'hatanan. Ima yu Ketana Shein Rilele Machzino Samiyad. Right, remember our Mishnah? We saw the Mishnah yesterday. So the Mishnah taught us that in the event that Rachmanis, the wife swapped, so then what happens? So again, the Isurim and the Chatos we discussed yesterday. Then the Mishnah says, oh, what about establishing paternity? So the Mishnah says that if the wives were Ketanas at the time, so there's no need to establish paternity because they're not going to get pregnant. And therefore, the husbands can take him back, effective immediately. Okay, so Shmuel is going to have a hard time with the Mishnah, right? Yes, he is going to have a hard time with the Mishnah, but he's also going to have an answer. So Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, well, he's not going to have an answer. The Gemara is going to provide an answer that's going to be used to defend Shmuel. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Harash Asha Haisa. That's an exceptional case. Harash Asha, right? Really, there's no precedent for that case. It's an unprecedented case. So the Gemara says, Michlal Dahavai. Wait a second. That's an unprecedented case. You mean to tell me that the Mishnah actually happened? Meaning the Mishnah is telling us ideas and concepts and using cases that are fantastic cases in order to teach us what would be the effective halach in those situations. But you mean to tell me that that actually happened? Two brothers married two sisters. And remember, by the way, if you recall yesterday's daf, there were twin boys, there were twin girls, each one of them were born on the same calendaric day, 1 year apart. And right, in other words, it's a fantastic case. It's there just to teach us the concepts of, go over yesterday's daf, in terms of what it was there to teach us. It taught us about the Inisr Chalal Isser, unless it's Basachas, and Isser Kolal, and Isser Mosif. And it teaches us regarding Chatos, and it teaches us regarding Bia Rishona, Bia Shnia. There are so many concepts that we learned in the course of the case. But the case itself, you mean to tell me it's a real case? So Ella Kaharashaisa, Vechilov Loshiach. So the Gemara says, you're right. It's not an actual case. But in the event that we had such a case, so there was no need to make any kind of rabbinic legislation, being that it's such a remote possibility, such a remote case, it's what's called in Halacha a Milsad Loshiach. And the rabbis don't extend their gzeras to a Milsad Loshiach. Okay. Lishna Achrina. Okay, so everything we just said, good. Shmuel's a requirement of paternity. According to the first version of the discussion, a woman is always going to have to separate from her husband, even if she was a katana, even though there's no need to do so, but the Chachamim extended their gzera to even a katana as well. Only notable exception is a katana who is either converting or being freed from her slavery. Lishna Achrina, version number two of the discussion, it's going to be nearly identical, but with one significant change. A woman converting, she does not need to wait 3 months. A woman who is emancipated does not need to wait 3 months. Even as they are adults, they don't need to do so. Okay, which means, aval katana bas Yisrael ein tzrichin lahamtin, gimachadashim. But a katana who is a Jew, so she does not need to wait 3 months. So the Gemara says, why would that be? So b'mai, I b'miyon, so if we're talking about the katana now, in version number two, keep in mind, what Shmuel now is saying is that a katana does not need to wait. That's much different than version number one. So the Gemara says, what are we talking about? I b'miyon ha'mar Shmuel chadazim na'i b'ged ha'kamar Shmuel d'bayi. So if the katana is separating from her man, either in the form of miyon or get, we know which one would say already in both of those cases. And here we go, reviewing exactly the same point. Da'amar Shmuel miyano bo. Ein tzricha lamtin gimel chadashim. Nasalan get tzricha lamtin gimel chadashim. So good, we know this already. Miyon Shmuel taught us, does not need to wait 3 months for paternity. Get, as a katana, does need to wait 3 months. So the Gemara says, so, Elab is nos. So we're talking about znos, meaning she just simply had a relations outside the context of marriage with a man. So when it comes to znos, so it's not going to be common by a katana, and therefore the Chachamim did not extend the requirement of Gimel Chadashim by a katana who just had relations with a man. So Giyar's Meshachrecher, Dishchich was nos Ligzor. So the Gemara says, okay, but when it comes to Giyar's and when it comes to Meshachreres, so they don't have to wait 3 months? So the Gemara says that's difficult to understand. Meaning, again, in version number two, according to Shmuel, a Giyar's and Meshachreres do not have to wait 3 months. The Gemara says, look, if it's a function of we have to establish paternity, you don't think we need to establish paternity? We're talking about adults over here. So who damar ka Rabbi Yossi? So the Gemara says, well, Shmuel is in line with the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. What is the sheet of Rabbi Yossi? The Tanya. Hagiyaros v'ashvoy v'ashivcha sheniftu v'shenizgayru v'shenishtachreru. So if you have a convert, a captive, a shivcha, who were either redeemed, converted, emancipated. So, tzrichos lamting emo chadashim de Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we assume that these women, while being in their former states, were violated. They had relations with men. And therefore, there is going to be a demand, a requirement to establish paternity. Therefore, there's going to have to be a legislated 3 month waiting period before they're with another man. And Rabbi Yossi, Matyo Learis Lanasa Miyad. And according to Rabbi Yossi, so they could be Me'ares Miyad immediately. To which the Gemara says, I'm a rabbi, my time to Rabbi Yossi. Now, what is the reason behind Rav Yossi? So why should that be? So Kasavri Isha Mizana Mishamesh Bamoch Kidei Shelo Tisaber, because the assumption is according for the sheet of Rav Yossi that when a woman has relations and it's illicit relations, so she'll use some sort of contraception in order to make sure she does not get pregnant. Meaning that in the case of Znos, there's no concern for establishing paternity because she'll make sure she doesn't get pregnant. So I understand a woman who is looking to convert. So if she's looking to convert, so now that she's looking to convert, so I understand that she's going to use some form of contraception. And yes, but right now, if you are wondering to yourself, we are discussing a woman who's looking to convert, and right now she's engaging in illicit acts of relations, doesn't exactly sound like the best candidate for conversion. Okay, don't worry about her. Look, she's looking to be Jewish, but don't worry because if in fact she's having any kind of relations right now, she's using contraception. It sounds strange. I know it does. All I'm doing right now is acknowledging that this sounds strange, meaning We're just I'm just connecting right now, and the idea that this doesn't sound like our greatest candidate, but still, the point of the Gemara is that at least she can anticipate. Look, I'm going to convert, and so therefore I'm not going to get pregnant right now because obviously I'm looking to convert. The Gemara points out that, but that's all well and good in the case of conversion. But there are two other cases that were also under discussion. A woman who's going to be redeemed, she's held captive, and a woman who is who's going to be freed. She's a Shifcha Kananis, and she's going to be freed. So, Shvui v'Shifcha Nami, Dishamim Memarayu Mantari Nafshayu. So the Gemara says, and look, even a woman held captive, I can entertain the idea that she is, that she overhears that she's going to be released. And even a woman who is a Shifcha Kananis, she hears her master who says that, you know what, we're going to free them. So, but the Gemara says, but when all said and done, there are going to be circumstances in which it's going to happen at a blink of an eye, or the knocking out of a tooth. Okay. I didn't mean to be this cute today, but okay. So, in other words, we know that in a Shifcha Kananis or an Eved Kanani, so if you knock out a tooth of theirs or any kind of appendage, so they go free immediately. They're yotzei b'shein v'ayin. So and that's something obviously that is unanticipated. So you're telling me that how could it possibly be that? Don't worry, they're going to use some sort of contraception, and therefore we don't have to worry about establishing paternity. I don't know. In this case over here, don't you think you have to worry? V'chitim called the memela moda, and the Gemara says, well, memela, meaning maybe Rav Yossi would agree in such a circumstance. So the v'hatzanan, but we learned in the Mishnah, anusa mafuta tzrichalam tingim uchadashim, div Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi mati le'aris l'nasa miyad. And meanwhile, the Gemara says, I know it's not true, because even the case of rape or seduction, so even there Rav Yossi says that you don't have to wait 3 months. Okay, what comes out over here? Comes out over here that according to Rav Yossi, under every circumstance, there is no need to wait for 3 months. So the Gemara says, what is the shita of Rav Yossi? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the shita of Rav Yossi is. The shita of Rav Yossi, El Amar Abayi, Shemazanim is Apeches, Shalotis Aber. So the Gemara says, because a woman who has relations, so even after relations, she can prevent herself from becoming pregnant. Now, literally, the Gemara means is that basically she can turn over, and that will flush her system. And V'idach, and now, those who argue with Rav Yossi, Chayshin, Shemla Nisabcha, Yafa Yafa. And those who argue with Rav Yossi says, look, it's not really it's not a 100% guarantee that that will prevent her from becoming pregnant. Meaning the post relations maneuver and in terms of preventing pregnancy, the Chachamim will tell you. Meaning those who argue with Rav Yossi will just simply say, not that effective. All right, a lengthy discussion. Basically, let's just summarize. Let's walk away with something in our hands. Shmuel tells us that normally there is a legislation that in order to establish paternity, a woman had relations with another man, whatever the circumstances were. She was married to another man. She wasn't married to another man. She was held captive, whatever the circumstances were. And now she's moving on to another man. So a 3 month waiting period in order to establish paternity. Simple, simple. With notable exceptions. Now, the notable exceptions is where things get complicated. Meaning, what are the notable exceptions for Shmuel? So there are two versions of Shmuel that we saw in the first half of today's daf. In version number one, the only exclusion, the only exception to this rule is going to be a ketana who is converting or is freed. In version number two, a gedola who is converted or freed. But any ketana does not need to wait. Okay? And then a discussion in terms of whether or not version number one or version number two can be either validated or disputed. Okay, that is that's been a big part of today's daf. Most of the Amud Aleph. Okay, let's go. Finishing up now. V'imayu kanos. Now if they're kanos in Yisrael is low. Ema. Now the Gemara says. Now wait 1 second. In the Mishnah, what do we say that if they are kanos, so at that point in time they're going to be disqualified from truma. Gemara says, what are you talking about? Even if the Yisraelis, they're going to be disqualified from truma. Meaning a woman who has a forbidden act of relations is going to be disqualified from truma. Why is the Mishnah talking about kanos? So, ema im hayu neshe kohanim. So the Gemara says if they were the wives of the Kohanim. Gemara says, what? Wives of Kohanim? What are you talking about? Neshe Kohanim, Neshe Yisraelim lo, v'amar Rav Amram. Hamil sa'amar lan Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes made a comment. V'an harinu le'enein mimas nisan. And what we did is that we validated it based on a Mishnah. Eishes Yisrael shenen sa'afa pishu mutel sabala. Psula kahuna. So a Eishes Yisrael who is violated. So even though she is permitted to her husband, but psula kahuna, meaning that act of forbidden relations will disqualify her for kahuna. So when our Mishnah is talking about a kohenes, what does that mean? Meaning a woman who has a forbidden act of relations is disqualified from kahuna. Doesn't matter whether she's a bas Yisrael, a bas kohen, it doesn't matter. So Amar Rav Achi Kamar, so the Gemara says, you're right. What our Mishnah is coming to teach us is the following. Im hayu kohenos nesuos li Yisrael, nifsalum in a truma de ben ashayu. It means the following. We're talking about a bas kohen. Now, a bas kohen married to a non kohen. Okay, what's her status? While married to the non kohen, so she has no rights and privileges of a kohen. Meaning, she can't eat truma. And let's just stop over there, right? That's it. Now, the halach is very clear, and that is that Rachmanis. Let's say she's no longer with her husband, death, divorce, and this is an important qualifier. She has no children. So what does the Torah say? The Torah says, Vishava el beis avia. She goes back to her father's house, meaning she can now resume almost, right? I don't want to complicate it right now, but it's what I'm saying is true. Almost all rights of Kohanim she can return back to. One exception, not for now. So the, and she can go back in eating truma. Okay, let's say nice and simple. So what we're learning together now, this is what our Mishnah is making reference to. That if you have a bas kohen and she has the forbidden relations, and even if it was not intentional, does not matter, she cannot go back to her, even if she does go back to her parents' house, she will not be able to resume an ichruma. That's the point of the Mishnah. Hajal achar ba'achin, and that is the end of the third parak of the Masechta. Lamed hey amed beis. We are now going to start this morning, the fourth parak of the Masechta, and Chalitza Yibum. Good. That's a big part of the discussion over here. This fourth parak is going to take a minute, more than a minute. It's a pretty sizable parak. Takes us all the way to Daf Nun. Okay, so this is going to be a 2-week endeavor for us in terms of the fourth parak here of Yevamos. Let's start the first Mishnah. Hacholos liyavimto. Okay, so you do chalitza. Okay, the procedure of chalitza we're going to be learning later in the Masechta. Right now, our Mishnah is going to be sitting and focusing on one singular point. Hacholos liyavimto v'nimtzeis me'uberes, and it turns out that she was pregnant. Okay, you did chalitza. Well, I'd say too early. Okay, in other words, remember what's the halacha? The halacha is very clear. When is there yibam and chalitza required? Only if she does not have a child from her late husband. If, in fact, she had a child from her late husband, truth of the matter is if her late husband had a child even from another woman. So at that point in time, there is no requirement of Yibam or Chalitza. And if there's no requirement of Yibam Chalitza, she's now forbidden to him because now she's Eishasach, b'makam banim, and then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, so what happens now is that the husband died, and the brother-in-law did chalitza, and he did it a little bit too early, a month after the burial, or even 2 months afterwards. And lo and behold, so the widow was pregnant. Okay, so was that chalitza valid chalitza? It really depends. What is it going to depend on? Whether or not the pregnancy is going to result in a viable child. If the pregnancy results in a viable child, so then there was no yibum, and then the chalitza wasn't required. Okay. That in of itself is not the end of the world. What's going to become much more problematic is, what if he opts to do yibum at that point in time? Okay. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Hacholitz leivim tovinim says mu'beres v'yalda. So, let's say he does chalitza to her. She was pregnant. Nobody knew it. And she gave birth. If it, in fact, was a viable child that she gave birth to, so So how do we, we're going to go back now and we're going to, and we're going to relitigate that chalitza. What was that chalitza? It was a strange ceremony. That's all it was. Meaning it wasn't required. It doesn't convey upon her the status of being a chalutza. Meaning that now he to her have zero relationship whatsoever. And therefore, he's allowed to marry her relatives. And she's allowed to marry his relatives. It is not chalutza so. Even though they did chalitza. But it was an unrequired chalitza. And therefore, it does not confer any status. V'lo pasam in a kahuna. And she's not going to be disqualified from kahuna. She's a chalutza. She's not a chalutza. So, ain avlad shel kayama. If, however, the child was not a viable child, so who asur bekrovasev? He asur bekrovav. So that means to say that the chalitza, we're going to go back now and look back at the chalitza that was done. And what is that chalitza that was done? That's called a chalitza. And because she did not have a viable child from her late husband. Upasam and a kahuna. And obviously, now that she's a chalutza, disqualified from kahuna. Okay. Hakonis is Yivimta, Vinim says Mubaris Vialda. So now, let's go now in the other track, which is that he married her prematurely, thinking that he was doing the mitzvah of Yibum. And Rachmanus, she was pregnant from her late husband. So now, if in fact it was a viable child from her late husband, so Bizman Shah Vlad Shokayama Yotzi. So at that point in time now, so he has to divorce her. Because what does that mean? It means there was no mitzvah v'yibum. What does that make her to him? Eish esach. So now, the marriage over here just simply disintegrates because there was no marriage. Because it's an erva. And v'chayav mekarban. On top of that also, he just had relations with a erva. He has got to bring a karban. V'imein v'lad shel kayama yikayem. Now, if it was not a viable child, so then he can keep her as his wife. Because now he's doing the mitzvah v'yibum. Or I should say better, he did the mitzvah of Yibum. Safik ben Tisha L'Rishon, Safik ben Shiva L'Acharon. So now let's say he did the following. He married her 2 months after his brother passed away. And then she had a child 7 months later. Okay. We have now what's called a problem. Because we have two real possibilities, which is that this child belonged to the late husband and she was pregnant 9 months earlier. She was impregnated 9 months earlier. The alternate possibility is that she was impregnated by her brother, her brother-in-law, now husband, and it was a 7 month gestation. So those are two real possibilities. What does that mean now regarding the child? So honestly, regarding the child, child's now in good shape. What does it mean regarding the relationship? Relationship is going to be terminated. Okay, did you understand both points? So the Mishnah spells it out. So Yotzi Vavla Kasher. So actually, the Mishnah does not spell it out. Okay. Nope. So in terms of the relationship, so I'll spell it out. So in terms of the relationship, well, look, you don't know whether or not you did the mitzvah of Yibum. Alternatively, there was no mitzvah of Yibum. Because if the child belonged to the late husband, no mitzvah of Yibum. Child belonged to you, there was a mitzvah of Yibum. But we don't know. So because of this lack of knowledge, so now as far as your relationship to her is concerned, you have to terminate it because it could very well be that she's an erva to you. Okay. As far as the child is concerned, I saw it just click. So mi manav shach in terms of the child, meaning if the child belonged to the late husband, fine. So the child now is a perfectly legitimate child. If the child was your child, so that means the child now is a perfectly legitimate child. So mi manav shach, whichever possibility it was, the child is going to be good. Now, as far as your carbon requirements is concerned, so you may have violated an Isser in the Torah. You may have violated a Rayos. So on the possibility that you violated any one of the Isseri Karis, so what carbon do you need to bring? Ashem Talui. Now, it happens to be that as much as Mishnah makes it sound very straightforward, Safe Kares, you got to bring an Ashem Talui. It's not really that straightforward. It's not that easy. The Gemara in Krisus, which Baruch Hashem we did together some time ago, so it discusses this in much more detail. I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave the Mishnah right now in its simplicity. You may have violated Erva, so therefore you bring an Ashram Talui. Let's just leave it at that. I don't know. Itmar HaKholitz Lamu Beres Vihipila. Okay, so The discussion of the Gemara is going to sound extraordinarily similar to our Mishnah, but you'll see, however, how this plays out in terms of our Mishnah. First, let's introduce Machlokas Amoraim. Okay, you did chalitza to Mu'ubar. She was a pregnant woman, and you did chalitza to her, and then she miscarried. Okay. It's really strange, by the way. In other words, being that she was pregnant, obviously, the normal course of action is, let's wait and see. Let's find out what's going to happen. Again, the viability of that child will make all the difference in the world. If the child is a viable child, born as a viable child, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam, and obviously, there's no Yibam, there's no Chalitza, and everyone just continues with their life. She's an erva to you? Okay, she'll marry somebody else, you'll marry somebody else? Good. And if the child was not a viable child, then she miscarried, so now there's a mitzvah of Yibam. And if you don't want to do Yibam, then you'll have to do Chalitza. So obviously, the normal course of action is, let's wait and see. Okay. Regardless, you did chalitza while she was pregnant. Okay. And she miscarried. So here we have a machlokas amarim. Rav Yochanan amarim etzricha chalitza menachim. Rav Yochanan says, okay, chalitza was done. And Reish Lakish amarim etzricha chalitza menachim. And Reish Lakish says, I know chalitza was done, but that chalitza had no effect whatsoever. You must do chalitza again. Rav Yochanan amarim etzricha chalitza menachim. Chalitza mu'ber shma chalitza. Ubias mu'ber shma bia. So Rav Yochanan says that, look, the chalitza, and for that matter, bia as well, so it has status. And so even though, should you have done it at that point? Of course not. In other words, the normal course of action would have been, let's wait. But according to Rav Yochanan, it's valid. And Reish Lakish amar tzricha chalitza menachin chalitza mu'ber shloshma chalitza. Ubia mu'ber shloshma bia. And Reish Lakish will tell you, no, it has no effect whatsoever while she was pregnant. B'mai kemiflug, the Gemara says, okay, let's dig a little bit deeper. What exactly is at the core of the debate over here? E by Samakra, the Gemara says, either where they're arguing over a point of reason, or they're arguing over how to darshan a pasuk. E by Samasvara, we'll start with Svara. Rav Yochanan Savra, im yavo liyav yomar daha di'i abra, mapule mapla, mi la bas chalitza v'yibom hi, hashanami, tigla milsala mafreya. So look, as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, if we were able to forecast the future, now we're not able to forecast the future. Okay? You asked me who won the Masters yesterday? I wouldn't have guessed it. Okay. Sorry, Phil. golf reference. So we don't forecast the future, but if we could forecast the future and we knew that she would miscarry, so would we regard the chalitza as a valid chalitza? Sure. Because in other words, her future miscarriage is going to tell us that there is a requirement of either Yibam or Chalitza. Okay, so now, that's if we could see the future. We can't see the future. But we know what we can do. We can look back. In other words, we can see things retroactively. So, if we were able to forecast the future, would the Chalitza be good? Yes. Good. So we can't do that. We only can look in one direction. We can look backwards. So, being that now that we can look backwards and see that, I know she was pregnant at the time, but in hindsight, what do we know? Rachmana, she miscarried. So now you're going to tell me the chalitza was no good? The chalitza was required at the time. Okay. Sounds a little bit, Ben, I was expecting you to make this point, sounds a little bit like Breyer over here, right? In other words, our ability to look backwards and basically make determinations based on what we saw happen in the past. Okay, anyway. So hashanami tigla milsala mafreya. So Rav Yochanan will tell you, look, the only thing that is that is preventing the chalitza from taking place is our lack of knowledge. But in hindsight, we saw what happened in hindsight. And Reish Lakish amar tikle milsal mafer lo aminan. And Reish Lakish will say, look, that's not how halacha works. Halacha does not give you the opportunity to say, well, look, hindsight, Reish Lakish will say, hindsight over here doesn't work. At the time she was pregnant. At the time, it's very possible there was no mitzvah of Yibam and there's no chalitza. And you have to judge things based on not what's going to happen in the future and our ability to look backwards and say, hey, look, we now know what happened in hindsight. No, you have to judge it based on present circumstances. And present circumstances tells us she was pregnant. Or it could also be based on the argument between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is going to be based on Psukim. Rav Yochanan Samar Beinein Lo Amarachman Vahalaisle. So the Pasuk says that Ubeinein Lo, she does not have a child. Meaning, when is there no mitzvah of Yibam? When she doesn't have a child. And right now, currently, I know she's pregnant, but she doesn't have a child. Okay? And that's why the chalitza is good. Now, let's just leave it at that. And Reish Lakish, Shavar, Uvein Ein Lo, Ayein Alav. And Reish Lakish will tell you, look, even in the Pasuk, Uvein Ein Lo. Now, it says it with an Aleph Yud Nun. But we've done this already a couple times in the Masechta, and we're going to do it again right now. And that is that the Aleph and the Ayin are interchangeable. There are other ways to say it. This is not the only way to say it, but I'll try to keep it simple. The Aleph and the Ayin are interchangeable, and therefore, Ayein Alav, meaning that even if she's not, even if she doesn't have a son, but if she has something right now very close to being a son, and over here, she's pregnant from the late husband. So this is enough already to block and prevent Chalitza from affecting anything. Okay. So we have over here a really basic machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. You do your chalitza, to the pregnant widow. So was it effective? Well, first of all, I'll ask the obvious question. And I'll give the obvious answer. Should you do chalitza at this point in time? No, don't do chalitza right now. It's early and she's pregnant, and there could be that chalitza and yibam are simply not necessary. Okay. That would be point number one. But if chalitza was done at that point in time, is it effective? Machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says it's effective. Now, it's only going to be effective, mind you, if the pregnancy ends in some form of miscarriage. Okay. And Reish Lakish will tell you, even if the pregnancy ended in miscarriage, at the time she was pregnant, the chalitza is simply ineffective at that point in time. What are they arguing about? The Gemara says it could be Svaru, it could be Psukim. Anyway, but they're arguing. Okay, we'll pause over here, and tomorrow where we're going to pick it up is the back and forth, the classic back and forth in terms of which of the positions is more defensible.